One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for a day of GC action. A brilliant stage in the Critérium du Dauphiné. I really enjoyed it. The final mountain stage finishing, it's like a matinee performance, finishing at 2:30 in the afternoon from Le Pont de Claire. I think that's to not cut across Le Mans and Roland Garros. That's why I'm not complaining. From Le Pont de Claire to La Bastille, which is this absolute rampant climb. You rarely see these in French races compared to the Vuelta, a despicably difficult climb. But before then, it's a lot of... I call these Pegatra climbs because they're 20 minutes, about 6 to 7%, and they're all put together after a medium mountain start. The different climb is the Col du Granier, which is 10Ks, 8.7%, but almost no flat in the last 60Ks of this stage before a 2K 14% finish. And it was, I thought this was a really, really good stage, Benji, particularly because the breakaway, we had some ambitious people who weren't far away on GC in there.
Exactly. We didn't see the GC battle. We didn't see the breakaway battle. That's a very different thing at the start of the stage because the broadcast of Dauphiné starts a bit later. But I can imagine that it was quite a fierce battle looking at the profile, it being so hilly at the start. And Alaphilippe was in there. GC Jella, as you announced him yesterday, he was in that breakaway. And I actually liked seeing that. And for two reasons, both that he's trying to get ahead of things and maybe still wants to try and get a stage win this way, or wants to have a bit of an advantage by the time he reaches the mountains at the end of the stage on the GC riders. But on the other end, that Jumbo wasn't this team that hunts every person in the top 10 down just because they're 6 or 8 minutes behind, so relatively close. Jumbo knows they can catch this guy if they want to, so they allow him to be in the breakaway, and I like that on both ends. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, there's just no point chasing him too aggressively. You know it's going to come back later in the stage. And when coverage started, the breakaway had already kind of disintegrated. I mean, we saw... That's why I wish we could do flex coverage. Can we transfer the Giro whole stage coverage?
Yeah.
All those kilometers of covered if nothing happened in these transition stages and get... Dauphiné Stage 8 every single year is a cracker. And it starts from climb one every year. Remember 2020 Pinot and everyone, Pogacar's crazy. Can we get full coverage of this stage? I don't need the other ones, but this one would be great. But yeah, apparently it already kind of blew up on Granier. Ineos, I think, but I never saw proof of that.
Yeah, there was a scenario occurring because this break was 9 riders at the start of the stage. Alaphilippe, Trentin, Ciccone, Campenaerts, Oliveira de la Cruz, Tish Benoit for Jumbo-Visma, Bonamour and Sean Poussin. So some riders in there that you would say, these are the riders that can win this stage if it goes to the breakaway, because they're in the breakaway. But also because they're those kind of climbers that could win a stage 20 in a Grand Tour, like Sean Poussin, like Ciccone, and Alaphilippe could do that in some years. De La Cruz could do that in some years. Gap was max 2 minutes 30. And like you said, Col du Granier, the gap was 1 minute 30. And Ineos set something up. I don't know if it was pacing to make it hard, because it felt like they were trying to launch someone, which was Castroviejo, because Castro attacked on the Col du Granier. He was not in the breakaway initially, and he bridged up towards the... I can't tell you that he bridged up to the breakaway itself, because I swear the second that he got close, there were people in the breakaway making sure that he didn't get close. It was an interesting dynamic. And in the meanwhile, in the peloton, you've got Laporte making sure the gap is low on the before Granier. Then on Granier, you see the actual climbing parts of Jumbo keeping control after Castro's attack, because they don't care about Castro going up the road, obviously. And at that point, when you see Castro making a move, did you think that's just for the stage, or is that for a GC attack by Bernal 2 climbs later?
I don't really know. Maybe it's a defensive satellite. I think it might have been for the stage if he thought Jumbo weren't bringing it back enough, because he didn't really... judging from his later actions, I didn't really see him riding for a dropped Ineos GC rider, so it must have been for the stage. But it's kind of curious to see that. And Jumbo, don't react.
I like it. I like the strategy.
Yeah, they just, nothing really happens. They just, but they're setting, it's obviously a heavy pace because the peloton is pretty thin on Granier with Van Baarle pacing. Like, it's 25 riders. It's only really the best riders plus one domestique. You're out to bring one friend with you at this point of the race. Like Hindley with Bookman and co. So, yeah, and then we get to the Col du Coucheron and I don't even know. It's still Van Baarle pacing, I think. This is we're now into like 40Ks to go. No, sorry, less, 35Ks to go. It's a 7% climb. It's not that hard, but the last 2.5Ks are steep. And Jumbo still, they're just doing their pace. And one of their riders was pacing. I think it was still Van Baarle, right? And Volta hadn't taken over yet. And they were just, gap was 130. Ciccone, there was some good action in the breakaway, actually. Like, Alaphilippe was in full Alaphilippe mode this whole stage, like full panache. He's shaking his legs out. He's attacking for the camera. He's flicking himself later in the stage. It was absolutely brilliant to see. Ciccone, I think, was a bit more measured. Yep. And Benoit's not really pulling too much. He's clearly there as a defensive satellite, I think. Castro also wasn't pulling too much eventually when he got back to that group. But when did UAE take over, Benji? Because they went to the front with Groschartner, then Micah setting a really hard pace, which virtually dropped everybody.
Exactly. That happened on the Col de Port, which is the last major climb of the stage. Like you said, Benoit's in that breakaway as a defensive satellite. What you mean by that is basically that he's up there just in case that if someone makes a move in the peloton, that Vingegaard still has Benoit up there just in case. He probably won't need it. Let's be real. Without Benoit up there, Vingegaard could easily take care of the GC riders himself. But regardless of that, he had him up there. But UAE was indeed setting some tempo, so some stuff was happening. I don't believe this is for the victory. But then suddenly, I was thinking, he is thinking about the victory. Because UAE does this move. Groschartner, you said it. Micah, you said it. They're pacing. And then Yates attacks on the Col de Port and then kind of stalls once he sees that Vingegaard is with him alone. And the others are kind of on a gap. And I'm like, if this is for the podium, what UAE is doing, if this is to secure the second position on the podium, then Yates continues riding, no?
No.
No?
No, because then you just let, if you were going for second, you keep Micah and Groschartner around you and you make sure nothing happens on the descent and then you trust yourself on the final climb. I think, I doubt if you're Yates, you think O'Connor and Hindley will drop you on that final climb. I couldn't figure it out myself. I mean, that could be it because they are drops. So just keep, I think doesn't Yates do this on her feet a little bit? Like when Poggy's in his wheel, like he keeps riding a heavy pace after the attack, trying to, and then eventually he does, he never fully like, you know, when Poggy attacked Jonas last year in the tour, it's like huge attack on Spandel. Jonas gets to the wheel, fully like stops. And then huge, it's not like that. It's more, one big surge and then heavy pace. But then he eases off a little bit. Hindley was dropped a bit by O'Connor. So O'Connor comes across. He's defending third from Hindley for podium. The Australian Wars were great. Third, fourth, fifth. They were the best. I was focusing on that. Didn't care about the winner of the overall GC. And yeah, Hindley is dropped and O'Connor then starts pacing that group. Alaphilippe gets caught from the breakaway. He's fucked. He then does a full gas effort on the front of Yates for the camera. Yeah. There's no other explanation. But notes drop. What I could think, Benji, is if you're at Yates, you try to keep Benoit behind so you make it actually mano-a-mano and Jonas doesn't have Benoit for the descent.
Yeah. That's a possible solution there. But we got to keep in mind, because of all these moves in the group, the gap towards the front is reducing, right? The gap's now down to 30. Ooh, my lens is falling off my camera again. Anyway, we've got the scenario, 37 seconds at the top of the Col de Port. And I was thinking, if somebody attacks here, for example, Vingegaard, because it's the only person that has it left there, Yates has made his move, was pacing. Vingegaard was the next step that could potentially counter that. If he attacks there, he still has a chance of winning the stage. If he doesn't, I didn't believe in the stage anymore. But there's another man that attacks. And I was shocked he was still in the group. Pedrero! Where did he come from?
Dude, he's been in World Tour since 2016. I know he's had some nice-ish climbing performances. He went well at Route d'Occitanie, which is on, I think, this week coming up.
2018?
Yeah, sure.
Nibali versus Roglic on the either Mortirolo or Mortirolo, I think, where he paced really well.
But he's 31 and he's attacking Jonas and Yates after it's been like nuclear heavy pace all day. Crazy performance. And he's clearly got free reign. He wasn't helping Mas, which I thought was good. I actually thought there was a decent chance for them to win the stage because Benoit comes back. It's 30, 40, 35 seconds. But the problem is Benoit, as I've seen this week, Benoit is not a fast descender. But Jonas isn't, regardless of that, Jonas is not going to take this descent himself, eating wind. He's still pedaling through the corners. So Benoit goes on the front. He doesn't do the quickest descent. And then they actually lose another 15 seconds plus to Ciccone on the descent. And that's when I was like, now the stage is fully done if Ciccone doesn't fully blow up. Because Pedrera's up the road, did the descent on his own. In the group, we should say, Hindley comes back, Haig comes back, Guillaume Martin, Menkes, Alaphilippe, Jonas, Yates, Micah even comes back over the top. And yeah, but this climb, Benji, I've rarely seen this in French stage races.
I love it.
This is one of the most brutal finishing climbs we'll see in cycling this year.
What is rampa inhumana in French? That is the real question. Animal? No, that's it. That's not it. I don't know. Yeah, I generally don't know what it's called. But that's it. A French rampa inhumana, and I bloody love it. Because even if the gap is 57 seconds at the foot, because the gap is 57 seconds at the foot, Pedrero is in no man's land in between the front of the race and the GC group. And I'm still like, if Vingegaard goes all out from the bottom, there's a slight chance that something might happen. Even though Ciccone obviously is a competent climber, it's very likely he wins the stage at this point. 99% chance. But because this finish is so brutal, I still had part of my mind that thought, maybe it might be possible. You never know. Maybe he does a Juanpe and nearly rides into the barrier. So there was something there. But it's also, if you put this kind of stage in a Grand Tour, and it's not the 20th stage, it's just a breakaway stage, no?
Oh yeah, we would be complaining about, you made the final climb too difficult, so no one's going to attack on these 6 kilometers, 6% climbs beforehand, like in the Giro.
The length of the climb is a difference though. Because this is only 1.5K, so people are incentivized still to attack on the earlier climbs. So I think this is much better than a Fedaya-style finish.
And exactly, that's a great point. Like, Col du Granier is the hardest overall period of climbing in this stage, and it's 60Ks from the finish. And then you have that wall finish. And so, I mean, you could also say that about Tre Cimi, like Passo Giao. And anyway, this was a great stage. And even without huge GC gaps or changes, we get onto the climb. Micah starts pacing, and it very quickly becomes apparent to me that Yates is not going to attack, because if he wanted to really do any, well, first of all, GC is gone. If he wants to win the stage and catch Ciccone, you got to attack at the base with the gap at 1 minute. And Micah, it reminded me a little bit of Grenoble. Micah's pacing. I'm like, Yates going to attack, because it's like 20% ramps already. Jonas is in Micah's wheel, and then we get to this steep hairpin. Jonas finally launches. And there was a moment where, if Ciccone has a wobble, maybe Vingegaard could come back to him. But Vingegaard wasn't able to. Ciccone dropped his glasses on purpose to save weight on the climb, even though that's his signature celebration. Yeah, what the hell, man?
I was salty. I was like, he's going to win and he's going to throw his glasses into the public again. But no, he dropped them on the climb. Was it really because of weight? Has to be, right? But
I'll need to check if he still had his bid on in.
If he has his bid on in but dropped his glasses, the people will torch him. Anyway, did he like do a different announcement when he was celebrating? Because I saw some people rumoring
he did
that
seven. He put up the number 7 or 8.
Extension? 2027?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Or he wants 7 million across 3 years. anyway.
I'd love that.
Ciccone holds on. Actually, a really impressive performance. He was fourth on stage 6, leading the GC group over. Yeah, he fell out of GC after the TT and the other stages, but I really like that he got in the break here. Instead of going for a top 10 on GC, which he had the level to come top 10 on GC, he went for a stage. He won the hardest stage, I think, of this race so far. And he held off He only lost 40 seconds to Vingegaard on this climb, 37 seconds, despite being in the breakaway all day. Really, really impressive. And also after missing the Giro when he was in good shape. And I think he would have actually added a lot to that Giro d'Italia. An Italian in good shape who's won punchy finishes, I think he would have added a lot to the Giro. He couldn't do it because of COVID and he was very sick. So I'm very happy he's in good shape and I hope he brings this level to the Tour de France, winning his 10th race and his first race in France. Oh, his first World Tour race in France.
I'm disappointed because yesterday I made the big take that Julien Alaphilippe would end up losing his top 10 after this stage. And because Ciccone lost 5 seconds somewhere across the route, Alaphilippe made a top 10. Happy for Alaphilippe, though, but sad for my take.
Alaphilippe tried his hardest. So in the group behind, Vingegaard puts 10 seconds into Yates. The gap didn't actually go up too much. O'Connor sees some weakness in Hindley, and he attacks him again and secures his top three on GC. That's back-to-back years podium in GC. Guillaume Martin actually was very strong, and he dropped Haig, but the gap was just too much to move up. But he was a fifth on GC, but he moves up from eighth to sixth. Who lost? Danny Martinez, Benji.
Ooh.
So that was clear from Castro, right? Castro finishes on 2 minutes on his own. Not he didn't wait for Bernal, who...
He should have, to be honest.
Yeah, like he's never winning. He's just never winning this stage. He's never, ever winning this stage. So I kind of agree, even though I don't think it would have changed the GC position. But Danny Martinez cracks really early and he loses like 17 minutes and he finishes, falls out of 6th to 23rd. So Carlos Rodriguez, a good day. He moves from 13th to 9th. But yeah, actually no changes in the top five on GC despite some good attacking. Don't you feel like Ineos, their riders, like a different rider was good every day? Like Carlos was the best today.
I agree. But the ones that dropped out today, for example, Martinez that dropped out today, he completely capitulated, basically. Yeah. While if we take a look at Rodriguez and Bernal, they were able to have some consistency and not capitulate at some point in the race, which matters quite a bit if you're going to try and top 10 a race. Now, what does this say for the Tour de France for Ineos? I'm honestly not even sure because they've got Pidcock on the side. Pidcock, I don't believe in GC this year. But when it comes to the rest of the team, I also kind of don't believe in GC this year because these riders need to step up quite a bit for the Tour de France to be able to compete for the podium. And right now, I think they're hoping that they'll top five.
I think they think they'll podium. They go for the podium and they got to go all in for stages, right? Shouldn't they ride this like if it's like their EF Education Easy Post? Hope that one of them top fives, trying to stay in GC. You never take the race upon yourself as a GC team.
Yeah.
And then everyone else has free rein to go for stages. Do you remember more? Poll for the audience. Who's remembered more? Pidcock on Alpe d'Huez, which was a whole Netflix episode, winning that stage, or Alexander Vlasov's fifth in the Tour last year? If you're the sponsor, what do you want? Pidcock. To me, the answer is pretty obvious.
But then again, unironically, and this is not criticism to Vlasov, this is more criticism to the cycling industry. If Vlasov won in the same way as Pidcock last year, it wouldn't be as hyped up in the
media. Of course, That's a fair point. And listen, getting paid, top GC results get you paid. So rather than stage wins, generally speaking.
Like, if Pidcock was fifth in the Tour last year, there would be so much more talk about it than Vlasov last year, top five.
They would have made the episode about that. That's a fair point. But I'm just saying, like, I also think you can go for the fifth on GC. I have no problem with that either. You should. But that doesn't mean you need seven guys around that guy every day keeping him safe for GC. I think they've got to go for stages with, like, a Fraile, with Castro, which they actually tried to do today. And then, Carlos battles into the top 10. I would say the Max Poole struggled today. He lost a lot of time. I thought he was going to actually top 10 this race, but he struggled.
Surprising.
Yeah, I was surprised. He looked so good the other days. Maybe that's just a recovery thing. He's like 20 years old, 22 years old. Is Vingegaard washed, Benji? He didn't win.
Is Vingegaard washed?
He didn't win the stage.
I don't know. Is Vingegaard washed? That question came so out of nowhere that I don't know how to respond to it. I don't think he's washed. I think he could have won the stage if he attacked on the second last climb.
Oh, yeah.
Called a port attack, he wins the stage, in my opinion. Because his ascending is not terrible. I would rate Ciccone slightly higher, even though Vingegaard's ascending pretty okay. But Ciccone has more to lose. So that's why I would expect Ciccone to go faster in the descent. And then probably the last climb is spaced from the bottom all out for Vingegaard if he wants to win the stage. And then he has a chance of winning. But otherwise, he didn't if it came down to the last climb. That being said, outside of that, I don't think he's washed. I think he's favored for the Tour de France right now. I don't think Pogacar doesn't have a chance to win the Tour de France. But I think it's about... Oh, good question. If we put a percentage on it on my end, I would say about... Because I've not seen Pogacar with the wrist on a bike, I can't tell you how much chance Pogacar has to win the Tour de France. Because for all we know, he rides the same way Nibali did with his wrist issue that one time. Nibali broke his wrist and rode the Giro. And he was actually not terrible in that Giro. So I believe that it's really 60-40 in my head. Well, in your head, yesterday you said 100-0, but I don't believe you actually believe that.
Jace is pretty good. I'm scared of Adam Yates, actually.
How are you scared of Adam Yates and not of Pogacar? Come on,
No, I'm scared of the combination of the two of them. I think Vingegaard's better than both, but the combination, like Yates, is much better than everybody else that was at this race apart from Vingegaard. If UAE can find a way to put those two together, like Pogacar has to be... The thing is, like... of course, I was being a bit tongue-in-cheek yesterday, but do you believe Pogacar crashed in Liège to the audience? Yes. I don't believe the crash was fabricated.
The crash... Who the fuck is saying that? Is there actual conspiracy people are theory
acting,
saying
people are
that?
Acting like that.
Oh. Oh, in that way.
Then logically, it's not a good thing, is it? And so if already last year... And people forget... Okay, yeah, Roglic was great on Granon, I accept that. Jonas still beat the brakes off Pogacar for the rest of that race. He just didn't attack him until Altacam, and where he torched him again, and the TT torched him again, and he put like 3 minutes, 4 minutes into him. It wasn't just like one time Pogacar forgot to eat a gel, and then the rest of the race he was back to slapping the shit out of Vingegaard. That really wasn't the race. So that's also how I'm viewing it. And that was Pogacar at peak level, good preparation, no broken wrist. So it's like, the wrist thing is, I think it doesn't help, obviously. And, you know, Jonas might even be a little bit better. But Yates is very, very good. And the team, UAE team, looks very, very good. So, of course, it's not a done deal. Anything can happen. But that it's also the first week is very unusually difficult from a GC perspective. It's very difficult in the Tour this year, which it's is fine. Not good.
Well, it is good for us.
Of course, but if you're Pogacar hoping to come into the race develop during the race, that's not a positive. Anyway,
it is not. I feel like those kind of stages are easier to survive for him than the pure mountain stage if they came in week one. Let's say Cortlandos came in week one.
Tourmalet is a pure mountain stage, though.
Yeah, but my man, come on, that's a break stage.
Maybe. It's a Tourmalet, dude. It's the longest climb in the race.
Okay.
I think the hardest, the consistent one. Yeah, but the problem is the finish is easy.
And it's far from the top of the Tourmalet as well. That's also the issue.
Yeah. You're right. And Puy de Dôme is like, okay, it's hard, but it's not a 1 hour climb either. So yeah, it's not like Col de Loz, but still, it's more difficult, I think, than Puy de Dôme is harder than Planche de Belfie.
Yeah,
and Tourmalet stage is harder than the Chateau de Jungle stage 9 last year.
Yeah, that he beat Pino.
So, anyway, Vingegaard wins GC by 2:23. That's actually one of the biggest margins that the Dauphiné's been won by in this century. O'Connor third on 2:56, Hindley on 3:16, then Haig his third consecutive fifth on 3:47, then Martin Menke's nice results for them, and Torsten Train eighth in the Dauphiné is a really nice result. Congrats to him. As well, then Rodriguez, Jala. So what do you think, Benji? The Dauphiné.
What do I think? I don't know. Did you see it was kind of dead for the victory pretty early on? It was a bit meh. This Dauphiné, that's going to be classified in the I won't remember this at all.
I'm glad Ciccone won.
Yeah.
Jonas didn't need to win this stage. I'm glad it means more to Ciccone for him to win this stage.
Agreed.
Vuelta to the Tour, question mark?
Vuelta to the Tour. Well, I recall reading somewhere that he's the next replacement if someone drops out. And let's be honest about it. Jumbo's luck before the Giro. There's always a possibility that someone will drop out in the next 2 weeks. But let's hope for the riders that are selected that that doesn't happen. But that being said, he looks good. I don't know if he's had... What, by the way, if a rider like Valter has an altitude camp versus living in Andorra, what is the major difference between an altitude camp and the team support, probably?
You mean, but living, because like I live at 1300 meters.
Yeah.
And most of the people I know in this valley live at 1300, 1350. Jack lives at like 1400. There's no real altitude benefit from that. Oh, it's actually a negative.
Negative?
Yeah, because it affects your sleep. It still affects your sleep, but you don't really get the over 2,000 meters altitude benefit. And then every climb we do in this valley, the average altitude is like 1,700 meters of the climb, and it's super difficult. It's great to lose weight, but but that's different. Dowsett lived, I think, over 2,000 meters, but I don't live. Most people don't live up there, and Valter, I don't think, lives up there either. So yeah, a proper altitude camp is way higher. So that's different.
That explains a lot. Good to know. Anyway.
Last things from this Dauphiné that I'm just thinking of quickly. Should Laporte go for green?
Should Laporte go for green?
Yeah.
Instead of Wout van Aert? No.
Yeah. No.
If Wout van Aert doesn't go, then don't go for Laporte either. At that point, you're kind of like, oh, we're not going to do it with our best rider for green. Let's do it with our second best rider for green.
True.
kind of feels like arrogance towards the opponents.
So Poole has got nothing on his program on PCS. He's already done. He could do the Tour, but
Vuelta.
We've already spoken about Ineos. Yeah, I think Vuelta makes sense. We've spoken about Ineos going back to UAE. Are you on board with my theory about Yates as a shadow co-leader or not?
I think they will spin it like that. I think that's how they'll try and start it. I think they'll consider Adam Yates a co-leader as long as he's high up in GC. But I would expect it to quickly become clear that Yates will be on a relatively solid gap the second that Vingegaard attacks somewhere and Pogacar's the only one that can follow. That's how I see the scenario right now. And yes, he might be doing something like a Roglic early Granon move, but I would expect Jumbo to not be 100% scared of directly chasing down an Adam Yates move. They'll probably control the attack when it's happening. And if it actually gets away, they're probably going to make a decision of like, oh, it's not a big danger. He's on 3 minutes. So let's have him come back a bit. We can beat him in the next couple of mountain stages.
Let's run through the scenario analysis today. Pogacar's here.
Yeah.
40 seconds behind Jonas.
Yeah.
Yates is here 2 minutes behind Jonas. Jumbo have their actual tour team. They've got Wilco, Sepp and Wout also here. Yates goes on that core, the third last climb. The middle one. The middle one.
The middle one?
The
Courchevel, whatever.
Coucheron. He's got to do, it's 30Ks from the finish. He's got to do Col de Port. He's got to do La Bastille. Jumbo have denied UAE getting a satellite rider in the breakaway, which they will be able to do. No way Jonas has to react, right? Adam Yates has got to he's got to do Col de Port 7K 6% solo. He's got to do all of the pedaling descent solo. He's got to do La Bastille solo. And if you've got Wilco, they just do Skytrain, right? Wilco and Koos just let him dangle 15 seconds ahead and just pace with Jonas in the wheel. No way he should react.
Because on paper, at that point, you've still got Kelderman and Kuz with you. And even maybe someone else in the team.
Wow.
That's a maybe because there's a lot of rulers in the team as well. Semi-rules, semi-climbers. But you should have two or three riders to left at that point, and then you skytrain behind the attack of Adam Yates because it's only to the top of the second last climb called the Port because then it's a descend and Bastille, and that Vingegaard can do himself.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's going to be difficult, but I still think with the former Pogacar, that's what they'll be thinking. I really, really do believe that they don't just see Yates in the micro roll. I really don't believe they see him like that.
I just hope that it's a close fight. I don't care who the fuck wins of the two, or of the three, or of the whoever's on the top 10.
Better
I just want to see a good race. I want a close race until the final week. and I want it decided in the final week.
Is Australia the best cycling country in the world?
Is Australia the best cycling country in the world? Get the fuck out of here.
Three in the top five GC. Where's Belgium on GC here?
Well, they're not signed up because they're doing the Tour de Suisse because they believe they can...
You're all cowards. All your GC riders are cowards. They don't go to serious races. They want to hide because sports is too mean to them.
That's actually true.
Yeah. Okay, Riyadh Swiss coverage. So tomorrow we will have, we're going to be recording our Netflix reaction on Monday. Yep. Tour de Suisse is a TT today, and then Wout will probably win the sprint tomorrow. We will have our first, realistically, or someone like him, Thibaut Nace, hopefully Thibaut Nace, Belgian. Yeah, your best riders are in Swiss. we will have our first Swiss coverage on Tuesday, I believe, which is a difficult mountain day. So we'll cover that race then. With a quick recap of stages 1 and 2. But that's all from us today. Dauphiné in the books. Vingegaard looking good. We'll see Poggi next, hopefully, at the Slovenian National Championships. Hopefully he's in good shape because, I really want to see a big, big battle between Jumbo-Visma and UAE in this Tour de France. I can't wait for it. Thanks for listening as always, and we'll see you with the recap of the Netflix series tomorrow. Ciao.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.